This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
This is the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. We're going to be looking at the Clemson game today, previewing things primarily from the Clemson side with Hale McGranahan from theclemsoninsider.com. So let's go ahead and get right to it. And we are joined now by Hale McGranahan from theclemsoninsider.com. Hale has been with us the last couple of years to discuss the Clemson-Florida State game in the pregame. And he has been a straight shooter, so it's good to have him back, have his analysis from the Clemson side. Hale, thanks for joining us.
Jason, glad to be back with you.
So let's go ahead and get right to it. Obviously, this game, sort of the flip side from where things have been the last couple of years. I guess in 2013, Clemson was a favorite, although I think in hindsight, that was certainly not the way it should have been.
Right.
But given, you know, last year, Florida State came in, you know, with Sean McGuire at quarterback and all that, but still clearly the better team, the team that should have been expected to win that game last year. The 2013 matchup, you know, Florida State had a sort of a team for the ages. And now you look at it and the stats, when you start looking at the breakdown, we got a breakdown posted, you know, a tale of the tape that we do weekly over at Noles Digest. And it doesn't look real pretty if you're a Florida State, if you're coming from the Florida State side, and it looks awfully good if you're from the Clemson side. So can you fill us in a little bit on what the feeling is around Clemson right now and coming into this game and how they're approaching this game, given sort of the flip in expectation at this point?
Yeah, well, before the college football playoff rankings came out a couple of days ago, there was plenty of excitement with the 8-0 start and being so heavily favored. I think that caught a lot of people off guard that Clemson was 12-point favorite when the lines came out. So there was a lot of excitement with that stuff and people just feeling really confident in Clemson's chances of winning this game. And, of course, the taking care of business, the final three games on the schedule. Then the ranking comes out and they're right there at number one, and that just kind of turned things up even a little bit higher. And people are pretty excited. Especially because they feel that they're going to be able to take care of business against a rival and what's usually the biggest ACC game of the year. And yeah, it's just exciting times for the Orange folks around here in the upstate of South Carolina.
Yeah, this is certainly, at least in my view, the best Clemson team I've seen in a while. And it all starts with the quarterback position. I was never all that sold on Taj Boyd as an elite quarterback. You know, he was a good quarterback, a good college quarterback, a reliable guy. But there were times where, you know, he was not as accurate and able to change the game down the field as you would like, despite having the wide receivers. Clemson has just loaded up on wide receivers in recent years. I think in some sense they've been the beneficiary of the Florida program being down, because some of those receivers who wouldn't go to Florida State or Miami and State have just gone to Clemson.
Right.
And again, Clemson is loaded with wide receivers. I can't imagine how much better they'd even be with Williams out there at this point, because I thought he was their best guy. Can you talk a little bit about the development then that we've seen from Deshaun Watson over the course of this season? Because I felt like he started a little bit, as good as he is and as highly as I think of him, I thought he started a little bit slowly this year, particularly after that injury to his number one wide receiver. But it seems like the last few weeks he's just settled in and has been lights out. What really has changed for him?
I think he's just starting to really get into a comfort zone. Like you said, losing Williams was, in my opinion, a big part of his slow start. I think there's a little something to adjusting to a new offensive coordinator or coordinators, with Chad Morris now as the head coach at SMU. They've got the co-coordinator situation going on with Jeff Scott and Tony Elliott. So I think there was kind of some feeling out with that and everybody getting on the same page. Of course, those guys were the coordinators for the bowl game, but Watson was recovering from an ACL surgery, so he didn't have a chance to play in a game and go through live action with those guys. So you factor that in with Williams and just getting used to having kind of a different set of receivers he's throwing to. I mean, Sharon Peake, who's been in the program for a while, has been injured for most of the time that Watson's been at Clemson. Then Artavis Scott has really been the only guy who Watson was familiar with from last year, because another dude that's really emerged, Hunter Renfro, number 13, little white guy, just kind of looks like Adam Humphries out there.
Yeah, but this kid can roll. He can run.
That dude can play, man. He's really good. There's a lot of just ironing out and getting used to and all those kind of cliches. And now that everybody's gotten more accustomed to one another, I think you're starting to see what can happen once teams or once these players get on the same page and feel good pitching and catching with each other.
So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the changing coordinators. And that's, you know, that was something that was it's a big storyline coming into the year. And early in the year, there was some concern, obviously, because it looked like the offense was just not quite hitting its stride. But the last few weeks, again, they really have hit their stride. What are the biggest changes that you've seen in terms of how the co-coordinators have called the game? What are the differences in how they've called the game and emphases and how they've run the offense compared to when the Chad was there the last few years? What changes have you noticed the most?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is they don't try to go as fast as possible the entire game. Morse's deal was tempo, tempo, tempo. I mean, he's just that high energy guy. And while they certainly like to snap the ball and go no huddle and go fast, it's not at the pace that they were the last few years. So that's a big change. They're more committed to running the ball, which is something I thought that Morris could get away from at times throughout his career. Tony Elliott is the primary play caller, and he's the running backs coach. And I would say he's a little more conservative than Morris, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I don't know. No, if I would say it's a good thing, but they're more committed to the run, and maybe that has a little something to do with the situation along the offensive line. I mean, this is as good an offensive line that Clemson's had in a long time. My dad, Ed McGranahan, who does some freelance stuff for the site that I work for and the state newspaper in Columbia, actually spoke with Clemson's former head coach, Danny Ford. I think they spoke yesterday, and my dad said that Ford was just raving about the offensive line and how just different it looks compared to what they've had in the last, I don't know, decade or more.
Yeah, it's been a weak point, and actually it was expected really to be a weak point coming into this season, but it has not been to this point.
Yeah, I mean, Mitch Hyatt, the All-American left tackle, is a freshman who's stepped right in and bit everything to anybody could have ever wanted. He's been fantastic. Eric McClain, who's been a reserve for his entire career, came to Clemson as a tight end, has been just as good, if not better, at left guard. And they've got some stability at the center with Jay Guillermo and Tyron Crowder at right tackles, who's highly recruited out of high school, was coming into his own and playing really well. And Joe Gore, who's, like McClain, was a career reserve, is also probably, like McClain, has surprised some people and played pretty well. So they've gotten some good play out of the offensive line, and a lot of it, as I just mentioned, from guys who a lot of people didn't really know about. So it was hard to say definitively these guys are going to be good or these guys are going to be bad. And I think the answer that I had, most other people had, was I don't know what they're going to be. It's going to be tough to say. Then you look at what Wayne Gallman's done. I mean, that guy has made an incredible jump from last season, his redshirt freshman year, into this year. He's easily, in my opinion, the second best back in the ACC, and I guess I don't need to.
Oh, I don't.
Rank is number one.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about the number one back. You know, the Hood kid from North Carolina is awfully good as well.
And You're right.
That's.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of good. It's not just a lot of good backs in the ACC, and Gallman is a really, really good back. Not just a lot of good backs in the ACC, but a lot of good. It's really interesting. It seems like the running back position has sort of come back the last couple of years. You know, you saw Gurley and some of those guys last year, and then you know this group of sophomores is the best group I probably have ever seen in my life.
Oh yeah, with Fournette and Hood, like you said.
Fournette and Hood and Cook and Gallman and Joe Yearby down at Miami. It's Sony Michel at Georgia. It's been a really unusual group of backs. It's going to be interesting to see what happens at the next level as those guys all hit. You know, going through the stats, it's been interesting because, you know, Clemson right now is averaging 4.8 yards per carry, per rush against FBS competition. And, you know, I went back through, they haven't averaged that through a season in any of the stats that I've looked at. I mean, I went back to 2008 and, you know, in 2008, they averaged 2.87 yards per carry. That's, you know, that's a good bit behind 4.8. Yeah. 2009, 4.65. 2010, 3.82. 2011, 4.11. 2012, that really good 2012 offense, 4.16. 2013, 4.13. 2014, they really took a step back at 3.35. And then all of a sudden, this jump, like you said, 4.8 yards per carry, that's a big, big jump. You know, that's an extra half a yard per carry more that they're getting this season compared to what they've gotten in recent years. And they haven't had to run Watson as much to do that. So I think that goes right to your observation about how the offensive line has really been key and instrumental in the way that this offense has gone. That said, you know, some of the rumblings that I've gotten out of Tallahassee is that they feel like the one potential benefit that they have is that they may be able to limit Clemson in the running game, and that Clemson isn't really interested in running it for the sake of running it. They want to run it as a distraction to set up the pass so that they can do what they want to do through the air. So it still is. It's still a Clemson offense. It's still going to feature those wide receivers. And, you know, to me, the big concern coming from the Florida State side, if I'm the defensive coordinator at Florida State, I'm waking up in cold sweats all week thinking about Artavis Scott in particular, lined up in the slot up against my star position or one of my safeties getting an advantageous matchup against maybe a Tyler Hunter, a Javian Elliott, or whoever Florida State has at the star position or one of the safeties. That's going to be something that I think is going to have that's I think Clemson's biggest advantage coming into this game. And I can't imagine that that's not what the Clemson coaching staff has been looking at the most, is looking at how Miami got Stacy Coley isolated on Florida State's interior coverage. And, you know, on down the line, you saw the same thing with Louisville. You've seen it all year where teams have – they're not targeting Florida State's outside corners because that may be the best pair of corners in the country. But right. That inside area has been vulnerable all year. Without, and particularly with the loss of Trey Marshall, the starting star, right, earlier in the year, Florida State has just not been the same with him off the field. They were about a yard per play worse in the games that Marshall went out. You know, he went out against Miami early with a targeting penalty, and then early against Louisville after getting hurt. And those games, the yards per play output went up by about a yard immediately after him leaving the game. So that's where Florida State is. If they don't have an answer at the star position, I think this could get very difficult for them on in terms of slowing down this Clemson offense. Because again, Watson and that group have been so consistent and so good challenging teams down the field and putting players in one-on-one spots. So I don't know if you've heard anything specific from the team about some of that stuff, but from the Florida State side, I think that's the big concern coming into this game.
Yeah, the team's pretty good about keeping what they think they're going to have available to them to themselves, as you might imagine. I you mentioned Artavis Scott being the guy in the slot given problems. Really, the guy that you should be more cognizant of out there in the slot is Renfro.
Renfro's been so good.
I tell you what, man. If for people like me who cover recruiting, coming out of high school, I mean, he was just a walk-on, preferred walk-on option. He was a quarterback. We got to see him at the South Carolina State All-Star game, the Shrine Bowl. And he looked, you know, like a nice little player out there. And
well, he is white.
Two years later, we're watching preseason practice, and on three consecutive one-on-one drills, he made Mackenzie Alexander look like it was me out there trying to cover him. It was, I mean, he cut him up on two slants and a slant and go, and everybody's like, well, I guess all the talk about this kid being pretty good, and all of a sudden now he's on scholarship, there's a little something to it. And sure enough, he caught the first touchdown pass against Louisville and had another one the other night against NC State. And he's been so good, man. It's, I mean, you look at him and you stereotype the little white guy receiver, and he fits it to a T, man. Like, he walks over him, and he just looks like your normal college student, but he gets out on that field and he's one of the best players out there. It's pretty
cool. But he can fly. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And he's similar to a Ryan Switzer or somebody at UNC, where, you know, you look at him and you say, oh, he, you know, kind of looks like Justin Bieber. But that's Switzer. I've heard him say that, you know, he gets that once in a while. But you know that. But then you get him out there, and you know he's running away from people. So violating stereotypes. And again, that just emphasizes they can go Artavis Scott in one slot and put Renfro in the other slot and pick their matchup. And to me, that right there, I think Florida State's going to be able, even if Lawrence Stample doesn't play, I think Florida State will probably win the matchup for the most part in the running game. I don't know. I don't see Clemson running the football on Florida State in this game all that well. But I'm not sure that Florida State can stop those slot receivers. I think they'll be able to handle the screen game fairly well, partly because of how good those outside corners have played against the screen game. But it's that downfield stuff on the switch routes, the rubs, you know, your shake routes and things like that on the inside that I don't see Florida State having a whole lot more success against that than they did, say, against Stacey Coley from Miami. And Watson is the best quarterback in the ACC. He'll take advantage of it when it's there. And to me, that's the game on that side of the football. If Florida State can't stop that, Clemson scores their points, bottom line.
And that's kind of going back to Deshaun's struggles early on in the season. That was a part of what contributed to those issues, was the lack of a threat going vertical, where Williams was that guy. Sharon Peak can have that in him sometimes.
He's not quite as fast as he was when he was, say, a sophomore. Those injuries have added up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think he's as fast in pads as he is without him. He times really well in the offseason and all that stuff, but he's one of those guys who doesn't play as fast as he clocks in at, like, a combine. But I'm saying that to say that Deion Kane, another Florida kid, has
true freshman.
True freshman out of Tampa, has started to emerge as that downfield vertical, take the top off the defense, whatever you want to call it, threat for Clemson. So,
yeah, and
while
this is
that could be a concern for Florida State, it's at this point it's not like 100%. You know, Clemson is going to win that matchup, in my opinion.
Well, again, from the outside, I don't think Kane or anybody else is going to beat those outside corners all that much. And I think the vertical threat's going to have to come from those slots on the inside. And that's where the emergence of Renfro and Artavis Scott in some of those things, on those on flag routes, on shake routes, different things like that. That's where I think the matchup advantage really is. I mean, Kane has come on, and you hear a true freshman. It takes a little bit for true freshmen to figure it out. It just does. And that, that goes back to some of the struggles at Alabama as well. Alabama, Florida State, Clemson, all of them this year have had younger wide receiving cores, or, young guys that the fan bases are going, well, why isn't he on the field, or why are we struggling passing the ball when those guys are in the field? And, it's a true freshman thing. But yeah, the last couple of weeks, Kane has started to take that step forward. It's the time of the year where you start to see some of those freshmen contribute. And we did see that from Florida State, for example, in this last week against Syracuse, which is where you've seen some hope from the Florida State fan base that this game against Clemson could be competitive. And that sets us up well to talk a little bit about the other side of the football. So let's go ahead and transition over to that. Once again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and I'm joined by Hale McGranahan from the ClemsonInsider.com, talking Florida State, Clemson. We're shifting over to the other side of the football, talking about Florida State's offense against Clemson's defense. And this is a place where, I'll be honest, I didn't expect Clemson's defense to look anything like they have this year. I given the amount of NFL talent that they lost last year, I expected them to be a good defense, nice college defense, top three or four in the ACC, but I did not expect what has to this point been a top five or six defense in the country. Despite losing all that NFL talent, they've just reloaded, and they've not recruited like an Alabama or a Florida State to expect that. But wow, have they looked good? They've been able to. They've been all over the running game. And again, you mentioned Mackenzie Alexander a little bit ago. He's been locked down on one side. They've been locked down at the safety position with a guy that may well be the best safety in the country at that position, with Jayron Kearse. They've been good across the board, and it starts up front where I thought they'd have some weaknesses. And then those corner positions where they've been rock solid, and it's been very difficult for teams to find holes in this defense. Where do you think the concerns are against the Florida State team coming into this game? We know how good the Clemson defense is. Where might there be some holes?
Defending against the pass with the linebackers, and I guess that means covering running backs and to another extent tight ends. I think that I'm Jimbo. I'm looking for as many ways to get Dalvin Cook the ball in the passing game, whether he's matched up on Ben Bowler or even B.J. Goodson. That's to me, that's the biggest, and to a lot of people, not just me, that's the biggest weakness for this Clemson defense is stopping running backs catching the ball. It's been an issue.
Yeah, and the question there is how Clemson decide. I mean, knowing that Cook and actually also Jacquez Patrick, who played really well against Syracuse in his first major action this year as a true freshman,
yeah,
both of those guys catch the football really, really well out of the backfield. What do you expect Clemson to do to try to limit the damage that those guys can do coming out of the backfield against those linebackers? Because I've felt the same way. After looking at Clemson as I have over the course of the season, the one place that stuck out as a possible weakness on that defense is that Boulware and Goodson, while they're really, really good in terms of run fits and their aggressive play downhill at that linebacker position, they've got some issues in terms of being able to stick with quicker backs in pass coverage, and there isn't a faster back in the country than Cook. So, mm-hmm. What do you think that they do to try to limit the damage there?
I suppose they could make some changes and mix things up with their personnel. They've got a couple guys who are pretty good runners. And linebacker Travis Blanks being one of them. He's from Tallahassee. He came to Clemson as a safety, played nickel as a freshman, moved to safety, as a sophomore, tore his ACL. Now he's basically a Sam linebacker, more or less. So I think maybe they could try to involve him some more. Doreen O'Daniel, who also plays a strong side linebacker, could be another option. Maybe try to work in some of their safeties. Venables isn't afraid to mix in a bunch of safeties. You mentioned Jaron Curse, but there's starting alongside him is TJ Green, but they've got a couple other guys they play. Jadar Johnson, he gets a good bit of run. Jeff Gibson hadn't played as much. I guess I say a good bit of guys get some run. I keep forgetting Corinne Wiggins is not playing this year because he tore his ACL. I think that they could try to do some different things with personnel. Getting back to my original point, that maybe Venables hasn't really shown this year. But I don't know. I mean, that's, you mentioned somebody from Florida State having cold sweats and waking up at night. Brent Venables probably hadn't gone to sleep because he's just probably just thinking about Dalvin Cook in the flat, Dalvin Cook running a wheel route, Dalvin Cook running a
angle route,
whatever. Dalvin Cook running anywhere out of the backfield looking for the ball coming to him in the air.
Yeah, I wonder, again, I mean, that's, I wonder how much they bring Curse down to shadow that sort of thing. I wonder, I mean, yeah, I mean, because that's a real question. When you have a weakness like that on your defense, and Florida State's got a weakness at linebacker as well, you know, the whole interior of Florida State's back seven has been a little bit of a weakness over the course of this season. When you have that, it's really tough to scheme around. And that's, I've started wondering whether or not this game winds up a little bit higher scoring than people expect as a result of some of these matchups that could be taken advantage of. That said, if you can't run the football and if you can't protect the quarterback, it doesn't really matter. So the matchup up front's going to really matter. And Florida State at this point, it looks like they're not going to have their starting right tackle in Derek Kelly, and their best offensive guard in Kareem R. May not play in this game. He's hobbled a bit, but you know, the question is whether he's good enough to go. You know, that's two of their best five offensive linemen that you know, this is a banged up unit. They've struggled a little bit to protect the passer over the course of the season, and Clemson's getting healthier up front in that regard, thanks to the return of DJ Reader, who is really, he was going to be their bell cow at the defensive tackle position up to this point. Where is he at this point now that he's been back a couple games? What's the defensive tackle rotation going to look like in this game for Clemson?
Watkins and Pagano have been the starters, pretty sure every game. They've been the first two guys out there. Then Christian Wilkins, another true freshman who has been every hit as good as he was advertised just right from the get-go, which is...
He was an early enrollee, wasn't he?
He was not, actually. No,
oh, okay.
He was not. But kind of along those same lines as Hyatt, who was an early enrollee, Wilkins has been great just right from the get-go. Then you'll see Reader, he'll probably be that fourth, fifth guy, mix it in with Rod Byers, who's been kind of a career reserve, played some tight end a little bit too. Jabril Robinson, who's another tackle and has been out the last couple games with an injury, but with Reader now back, and I don't think he would have been much of a factor anyway, even if he was healthy. But as you mentioned, getting Reader back into the fold is a tremendous boost to that interior, which...
Starting to wear down, as far as I could tell, before he came back, because they're playing 65 snaps. Your starters are playing 65 snaps a game up front on that defensive line. Last year, you know, they were playing 35, 40 snaps per game, the starters oftentimes, because they had two starting units, basically. And this year, they just have not had that. They've worn down a little bit in games. And to me, that's one of the things, again, in this game, it's going to be interesting to see whether Florida State can wear them down a little bit going into the fourth quarter. If it can still be a game at that point, what that might do. But they've been different. I think they're potentially a little bit different with Reader on the field.
Oh, absolutely. And you took the words right out of my mouth. They've been for those first several games, they're really good to start, and as you got into the fourth quarter, kind of wore down a little bit, because for the last 3 years, I mean, they had five guys that they felt good with, whoever it was, playing alongside whichever guy. I mean, they didn't mix and match and run guys in and out, and yeah, it was a good dynamic they had there, and I think we were starting to see that, as you just observed, kind of going away. But I think they'll have a solid four guys that they feel good about from here on out, and I don't think you'll see as sharp a decline in success as we've seen in some of these other games earlier this year.
Yeah, and to me, if you're Florida State, that's got to be your goal. I mean, it's so strange to be talking about Florida State as an underdog in this way, but I mean, there's good reason for it. To me, Clemson's been the best team in the country to this point, or at least has played as the best team in the country. Ohio State may actually be the best collection of talent.
Correct.
But Clemson's played better than anybody else to this point, I think, and Florida State is young and as banged up as you'll ever see. But at the same point, you know, if as strange it is as it is to talk about how, you know, underdog strategies, Florida State's got to basically think about this game as get this into the fourth quarter and let it be close, because Clemson's really only played one game that was close in the fourth quarter at this point. I guess two. I mean, if you count that Louisville game, Louisville kind of came back toward the end there as well. But the one game that was really touch and go was that Notre Dame game, and Notre Dame really came screaming back late in that game as Clemson started to wear down a little bit. And even against Louisville, where, you know, they were ahead and it was not as much of a threat to lose that game, you could see them wear down a little bit. The question is, if somebody can push Clemson into the fourth quarter, can some of those issues be, you know, will some of those issues rear their head a little bit and potentially cost Clemson the ballgame? If you're Florida State, that's what you're trying to find out. You're trying to take it into the fourth quarter, having leaned on them a little bit and to test that depth a little bit. Because Florida State, even though they're banged up, is the deeper team overall. They're just really, really young, and they're likely to give up some plays. So to me, that's kind of the other game within the game. We've talked about a few of them, key points in terms of, you know, Clemson's slots against Florida State's interior on interior defense in the back seven, Florida State's running backs against Clemson's linebackers in the passing game, and then this one: can Florida State keep it close enough going into the fourth quarter that depth is actually a factor? To me, those are the three points coming into this game that really will decide the outcome on, you know, if whoever wins those key points actually not only wins the game, but, you know, if we're talking about keeping it close or whatever, that's the other part of it. Not just keeps it close, but potentially wins the game if you're Florida State. If you win a couple of those, that's where the game's decided, in my view.
And it's interesting you talk about that fourth quarter angle. I'm trying to find the number, and I can't locate it exactly, but I want to say it's been 10, 11, 12 games since Clemson has trailed in the fourth quarter. I mean, so to your point, that could be huge. If Clemson rolls into the fourth quarter down, how do they respond to that? What do we see from those guys in a position that they haven't been in a really long time? I think that would, as you're saying, have a pretty big impact on the way this thing ends up.
Yeah, it really is so strange to see the roles reverse so much in that regard coming into this game. And again, when in doubt, when you're in that situation, you have to feel like the team with the better quarterback situation has the edge.
Sure.
And, you know, you're not going to have a much better quarterback situation than Deshaun Watson. So you know, Clemson fans have got to feel pretty good about that one. And Florida State, you're probably going to see Sean McGuire as the starter from what we're hearing, with Golson prepared in case. But, you know, he didn't take the first team reps. There was still some question as to whether or not he'd even be ready to play this week. So it looks like it's going to be McGuire. But, you know, with Watson, you've got to feel like, Even if in the fourth quarter Florida State's able to keep it close, and you know maybe make some other issues or cause some other issues for Clemson that Watson more than likely is the difference. So I'm going to put you on the spot as we get ready to wrap up. What do you see happening in this game? So we talked about a few of the key factors. What do you actually see happening in this game on Saturday?
I think Dalvin Cook is going to have more receiving yards than he's going to have rushing yards. That's the one thing that I've kind of championed this week, I guess you could say, is I think that's where his impact will be felt the most is in the passing game. So that's one thing. I think Watson will have some good and bad times. I mean, as you were talking about, Florida State's outside corners. Clemson's going to challenge them. I mean, it's going to happen. They're not just going to avoid them. They're going to pick their spots and hope for the best at times, I would guess. And Watson has shown this year, I mean, he's thrown 7 interceptions, which is more than he had last year. And, well, there are a variety of reasons why he had 7 interceptions. It's still something that's on a lot of people's minds. And I don't have a problem with the quarterback being willing to take chances. I mean, you've got to at times. And I'm guessing he's probably going to have to take some chances on Saturday. And some could end up going pretty well. Some could end up not. So I think I say all that to say that I think he's going to have more success than failure. So I think when you look at his numbers at the end of the night, you'll see pretty decent-looking stat line. I think I agree with you. Clemson will probably have some struggles running the ball. I don't think they'll get away from it. I think they'll do as much as they can and take what they can get just to help with the passing game and try to keep things as loosened up as possible on that back end. So those are the main kind of factors. And with all those injuries along Florida State's offensive line, I would imagine that whether it's McGuire or Golson, there will probably be quite a few sacks for Clemson's defense, specifically with Shaq Lawson. He's been really good as taking over for Vic Beasley as that, I guess, alpha pass rushing threat.
If anything, he might be better than Beasley was. So
he's a more complete player.
Certainly.
Playing against the run and all that. Of course, size has a little bit to do with that. But yeah, I think Shaq Lawson could have a big night as well.
So what do you think in terms of score? And then put a percentage on win percentage here.
Oh, win percentage. I've never done that. win percentage, I'll say 75-80 Clemson wins. The last several years, I've been of the mentality that the home team in this series wins the game. And I believe that even more now because of the quarterback advantage Clemson has. And as good as they are on defense, I think that'll work in their favor as well. And I believe they'll win a game. I said kind of goofily, I don't even know if that's a word. I gave a goofy score the other day when we were doing our predictions for the site, and I said like 18-2 Clemson. I think it'll be a little low scoring game. Not like that. So I'll say Clemson wins 27-20. I don't think that spread to me just seems kind of high.
Which is also concerning if you're coming from the Florida State camp.
Sure.
That spread seems high enough that you start going, huh. Because,
yeah,
I mean,
you
wouldn't think that Clemson blows them out, but with a spread like that, somebody thinks that that's the case, and enough people with money think that that's going to happen that the rest of us who are sitting there going, this just looks funny. When a spread looks funny, that's you know, usually some sort of indicator. So in terms of what the sharps think. So yeah, but at the same point, I've had the same reaction. I think Clemson, I put the win probability around 80% for Clemson as well in this game. That's right around the area that it had Derek Kelly been healthy for this game, And, you know, if we were sure that Nile Lawrence-Stample was going to play and Kareem Arr was going to be starting and ready to go, then I'd put that a little higher in terms of Florida State. But with those guys out up front, I think or limited for potentially for Arr, and, you know, we're not sure what's going to happen with Lawrence-Stample. But with Kelly out, with Arr limited, with Lawrence-Stample questionable, I think you know, it's more like an 80% win probability for Clemson. You know, Florida State's got a puncher's chance. Anytime you have more overall athletic talent on your roster, you've got a shot. But yeah, that talent is young. It's banged up. It hasn't been real consistent, particularly on the road. They've not been very good. Florida State's offense has not been very good on the road. So, you know, I think it's about an 80% win probability for Clemson. And I've been kicking this around a little bit. I've thought all week that this game might go a little higher scoring than a lot of people expected, but you know, given some of the stuff that I've heard now from the Florida State inside, they feel like they've got a really good defensive plan. So, you know, I may drop my score prediction down just a little bit and say something along the lines of Clemson 30, Florida State 20, Florida State 24, something like that. Is around the range of what I'm thinking at this point, where I still think Clemson scores enough points that it's not a great defensive showing for Florida State, but maybe a little bit less than I initially thought. I'm still not sure about that, though, because I've got a lot of concerns about Florida State, their ability to be able to limit them on the inside. But that's what I'll go with. I'll go with Clemson 30, Florida State 24, and an 80% win probability as well. So anything else you want to add before we finish?
Yeah, when we were talking about Clemson taking advantage of Florida State with slot receivers and over the middle, that kind of deal, I don't know why I didn't mention the tight end, Jordan Leggett. Who's
yeah, he's been pretty good.
Pretty darn good. He's from, you know, Tallahassee, Nevada. I think that's how you say it, Nevada, Florida. So, yeah, he's been a tremendous factor for Clemson, especially when they get into the red zone. So, yeah, that's one thing I wanted to add, because I'd be remiss to not mention him when talking about Clemson and the passing game and all that kind of deal.
Yeah, and with him, actually, that's also, you know, Florida State's got Terrence Smith back, even though he's not fully healthy. Of course, big Clemson ties in that family.
Right.
And he's going to be a guy that's going to be responsible for Leggett a lot in this game. So it'll be an interesting, again, that's another one that it's good to bring up right here at the end. Well, either way, my guest has been Hale McGranahan from theclemsoninsider.com. Hale, thank you for joining us.
Jason, glad to do it.
And that's going to do it for us here on the Unconquered Podcast. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on the Twitter machine at Doc Staples. You can also follow our guest, Hale McGranahan, at Hale_TCI. That's at Hale_TCI. You can, of course, follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. And be sure to catch our next podcast, which will cover a little bit of recruiting in advance of the Clemson game. I'm Jason Staples, and this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a part of the vSporto Network. Thanks for listening. I made this.